Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
You done fell right down that rabbit hole, so reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you're by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right. Hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Punk, Tender Dog Ninja,
and sometimes their cat Freddy, but never the ferrets.
Hey, yeah. This is Tommy Chong. Right now you're listening to the Hillbilly Horror Stories. Ooh, gotta listen to them.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 377 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, we always start off by thanking our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thanks to all you men, women, and service animals for everything you do for us on a daily basis.
Yes, we continue to pray for you guys. Some of you guys are going through so much right now, and I can't even imagine how hard it is. But thank you for keeping us safe, and we'll always continue prayers for you guys. Please be careful.
We also know it's a rough time of the year. The holiday season is upon us, which most people celebrate and are excited about. But for some people, it's the toughest time of the year. And we just want people to know that if you're struggling right now with something mentally, just know that you're not alone. You've got help. Just a phone call away, a text away, an instant message away. Whatever it takes, just get the help you need, whether it's professionally or whether it's just from us or our group. Just know that somebody is there to listen to you.
That's correct. You guys will give us, give them our phone numbers, and we're here for you day or night. Just please reach out. And like Jerry said, please reach out to the group, because everybody there always steps up and is there to listen. You can also call the crisis hotline at 988, or you can text at 741-741. Just please reach out.
If you've got friends or family members that you know are struggling, even if they don't listen to the podcast, just reach out to them and ask them to join the group.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, we don't care if they listen or not. We just want to be able to be an outlet for them if they need it.
Of course.
All right, Tracy, we've got a fun episode tonight. We've got Carrie Hopper from History of a Haunting.
Nice.
She actually told us that we were one of the inspirations for her starting her podcast several years ago.
Aw, that's so nice. Thank you, sweetheart.
And it's a really good podcast.
Good.
Tracy, today we're going to discuss a place that we've actually ridden past, but have not actually stopped in, and I wish we had. And it's a place that I've been pretty close to 1,000 times.
What?
It's the Golden Lamb in Lebanon, Ohio.
Well, and I'll be dang.
Lebanon's right outside of Cincy.
Yeah, so where you used to work all the time.
Yeah, matter of fact, I used to stop at that Bojangles. I mean, not Bojangles, a Popeyes right there in Lebanon all the time.
Well, I have never heard of that place as well.
We have rode past it, and I pointed it out to you. This has been a couple years ago. I can't remember where we were going. It might have been when we were going to Erie the first time.
Okay.
But we rode past it, and we've talked about it on like one of our little shorts. But
that's,
I remember,
sad that I can't remember that. Isn't that sad?
But I remember riding past it and saying, oh, well, there it is right there.
Uh-huh.
But it's a pretty cool place with a cool history, and I thought we were going to cover it, especially since it's only like 2 hours away from us.
Well, we shall do that then.
The Golden Lamb Hotel and Restaurant has been serving guests for over 200 years.
Stop.
That makes it Ohio's oldest continuously operated business.
I mean, what do they start off with? Firewood and just sit outside and cooked?
How long ago do you think 200 years ago?
What's up? They ain't gone a long time.
It was. But.
What?
They had. It wouldn't back in like pilgrim days. I mean, it wouldn't the 1490s or whatever. 1600s or whatever. It was still. Anyways, let's just move on. All right. So let's learn a little bit of history. In 1803, Jonas Seaman. Originally from New Jersey, I might want to add. He's not from the area, but he moved to the area.
Oh, because there's a Seaman, Ohio, right?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know if that's the same spelling or if it's named after him, though. Hmm. But that's a good point because it's in the same area.
It's Seaman.
This is Seaman.
Oh, no, that's totally different. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so he's originally from New Jersey. He moves to the Lebanon area, and he applied for a license to open a public house at his residence. Do you remember what a public house is?
It's where the public comes in.
That's true. What else would that be called?
A restroom.
The public comes in a restroom?
Well, I mean, don't they? Public has to go to the
public.
Is it a rest stop?
A public house in the U.S., for the most part, is a bar.
Oh. Sorry.
Anyways, I think there's still plenty of places in Europe known as public houses rather than bars. And then if you remember when we were in Georgetown not too long ago, when we went to a little brewery there across the street from where we parked, there's a place that's called public house. But so there are some places that still call themselves public houses rather than bar or tavern or
I'll be dang.
Whatever the case is. Anyways, Jonas Seaman came from a background of innkeepers. His father, as a matter of fact, was an innkeeper. So let's just say it was kind of in his blood. That was the family business. That's what he grew up knowing. So with that being said, he wanted to try his hand at being an innkeeper. So the plan was to use his two-story log cabin home as a place to offer fine food and lodging to those passing through the area. His wife, Martha, would actually handle all the cooking duties. In a stroke of great luck, shortly after opening the business, the very first courthouse in Lebanon was built right across the street.
Oh, convenient.
That was 1805. Seaman's Little Tavern would eventually be the place to go for lunch in the area. All the people that were working at locals, when it was time to go to lunch, they would go there. I guess
because, you know, there was nothing else.
Probably for the most part. In 1815, there was an expansion to the log home by adding the very first brick structure, which is now the lobby if you go there today. The demand for lodging became big enough where a third floor was eventually added in 1834. You wouldn't think that this little hotel in Lebanon, Ohio, would be a place where celebrities would flock to, but that actually was the case. Celebrities such as Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, they stayed there, as well as 12 U.S. presidents, including James Garfield, Ronald Reagan, and Martin Van Buren.
Well, that's awesome. That's really cool.
The dining room has 450 seats, and there are 18 guest rooms. No one is exactly sure, though, why the name Golden Lamb was chosen.
Yeah, that's kind of different, but I like it.
I'd seen something like a sign from, like, not too long after it was there. It said something like the Ohio/Pennsylvania hotel under the sign Golden Lamb. It was like all that was on one sign. So I guess it probably came from back then, but I still don't know officially. Mm-hmm. Because it was the Lebanon Hotel at one time, and it hadn't been the Golden Lamb the whole time. It's just,
you know, recently.
Man, I don't know how recently, but it wasn't originally that. Of course, if you listen to previous guests and a lot of the employees, they think that some of these past guests might still be hanging around the Golden Lamb.
That should be. Why not?
The first ghost that believed to be haunting the inn is Judge Charles R. Sherman. He was the father of General Tecumseh Sherman. Now, Judge Sherman actually died at the Golden Lamb in June of 1829. Guests have reported seeing a tall, haggardly thin figure walking the halls at night. I think they said he kind of like, he looked humped over and like, you know, just really like in bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he really wasn't that old when he died. I think I get into that later, but I think he was only in his 50s when he died.
Oh, really?
And I'm thinking, man, I'm in my 50s, and I wouldn't be looked at as some haggardly, slumped-over old man, I would hope.
I was just thinking I'd like to be tall and haggardy and slim.
Well, anyways, he can be seen there on a regular basis. There's also the smell of pipe tobacco inside the building that is a non-smoking facility. You know, that's just really...
Wait, it's... I was gonna think, well, they could smoke anytime they wanted a long time ago.
Yeah, today.
Yeah.
It just really goes to show how addictive smoking is. Because mm-hmm. How many ghosts do we know that still smoke?
Right.
They can't kick it even in death.
I guess I have something to do.
Right. Now, that was the first ghost, but that's not the most well known spirit here. And of course, the most well-known is shrouded in mystery. That's the way I like my ghost, shrouded in mystery.
I like mine covered in gravy.
Ghost in gravy. Okay. This ghost is not seen as often as the judge, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't make itself known. She, and that's right, I said she, makes herself known by moving around objects in the rooms, knocking objects off the wall, or causing disturbances in other sorts of ways. People seem to think that this is the spirit of a little girl. She was given the name of Sarah. And why Sarah, you may ask? Well, many believe that she's the ghost of the niece of the inn manager at one point, Isaac Stubbs. With that being said, Sarah actually lived very well into adulthood. So it could be Sarah, but she wouldn't be a little girl. Unless that's the way she wanted to present herself. And that's what some people think. She had such a great time living there.
Mm-hmm. When she was a kid.
Yeah. That.
Can you do that?
What? Yeah. They
say that. If you're grown up, present yourself as a kid.
They say that you come back in the afterlife the way that you were happiest or most comfortable.
Oh, okay.
So, who knows? This is probably one of those cases where fact and lore get a little kind of twisted together. Not everyone believes that this is the ghost of Sarah. There is another candidate, Eliza Clay. Now, Eliza was the eighth daughter of politician Henry Clay. Henry Clay was elected to the Kentucky House of Representatives in 1803 and 1806. And, of course, you know, he lived here in Lexington.
Yes,
so.
Uh-huh. I didn't know that.
He was then a senator in Kentucky from 1806 to 1807. He then went back to the House of Representatives from 1807 to 1809, and then back to senator from 1810 to 1811.
What is his problem?
He actually was appointed to Secretary of State by John Quincy Adams in 1825, and he ran for president eventually himself. He was known as the Great Pacifier, and that's because people used to suck on his head.
Wait, what?
Huh? That might not be factual. I might have made that up.
Oh, good grief.
But that being said, on a trip from Kentucky to Washington, D.C., Henry Clay and his wife and a few of their children stopped at the Golden Lamb to spend the night. Eliza had gotten sick right about the time they got there. She was 12 years old at this time. After reaching the hotel, she became even more sick with a fever, and she ended up dying.
Aww.
She was buried in a cemetery that was, from my understanding, next door to the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the family traveled on to D.C. This was 1825.
So does she, I wonder if she really is buried there.
No, she is.
Does she have a marker?
I think so.
Aw.
But could you imagine your daughter dies
and
you just have to just pick up and still go?
No.
And people were like, you know, well, why were they traveling? It's such a long trip and all this stuff. you got to remember, there weren't any railroads back then. So the family would have been traveling by stagecoach. And here's a fact for you. 7 out of Henry Clay's 11 kids would die before he did.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you imagine having to bury 7 of your kids?
No. That's horrible. I guess diseases and stuff?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, you're looking at the early 1800s. Oh. Yellow fever, everything was around. All right. Let's discuss the possibility of this being Eliza's ghost rather than Sarah. First of all, it makes sense if people seem to think that this is the spirit of a little girl. I mean, Eliza died. She was 12 years old. That would make sense that it would be her rather than Sarah.
Well, yeah, definitely. And plus, she's buried there, so.
Right. Local lore says that the ghost first appeared after some of her personal belongings were moved to the fourth floor to be part of a display. Now, apparently the display was not up to Eliza's standards, if it was her. And she started knocking pictures off the wall and moving objects around that were in the display. Now, today that room is closed off to the public, but if you do visit and go to the fourth floor, you can look through into the room because they've got it, instead of a door up, it's like plexiglass.
Okay. I thought you were going to say through the keyhole.
No, they have plexiglass up there, so you can see into it. You just can't go into the room.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. But you can kind of watch and see if anything was moved or not, because nobody really has access to it, I guess. So
yeah,
if
definitely.
Something was moved, you know it was a ghost. They've also printed the legend of the ghost, and they have it kind of posted there by the door, so you can kind of read up on it if you're unfamiliar with the story. Here's the funny part. The room that Eliza is said to haunt is known as Sarah's room. So, Tracy, in October of 2019, the Food Network named the Golden Lamb Ohio's most haunted restaurant. Why? Because several guests have given reports of paranormal activity over its 219 years of existence.
Wow, that's amazing.
The hotel said that the hotel has openly admitted that they've become pretty well known for welcoming guests, not all of which are living.
Well, might as well go with it.
So we've discussed a few of the spirits already, but they aren't the only ones haunting the inn. One of the others is Clement L. Vallandigham. Try saying that 3 times fast.
Mm-mm. I'll pass.
He is a celebrated Civil War era congressman from Ohio. There's a room at the hotel that actually bears his name, and that's because he fatally shot himself in that room.
What'd you go do that for?
Well, he was the leader of the Northern anti-war effort, and these groups were collectively known as the Copperheads. He was facing charges for treason for opposing the war efforts and was actually escorted to Tennessee. He eventually made his way to Canada, where he launched a campaign to become the Ohio governor. Even though he was in Canada, he's trying to become the Ohio governor.
Can you do that?
I mean, I guess you could back then. He secretly returned to Ohio in 1864, and years later, he was at the Golden Lamb in a second floor room. Now, back then, it was known as the Lebanon House, which I said earlier. He was an attorney representing and preparing his defense for Thomas McGahan. Thomas was accused of fatally shooting a man named Tom Myers. Now, this had taken place during a saloon brawl. While demonstrating how the victim could have accidentally shot himself while drawing his pistol, Vallandigham fired a bullet straight into his abdomen. He died in the room the following morning.
Dang it.
Now, that's an attorney.
That did not turn out how it was supposed to.
That is an attorney who will go to work for you.
No doubt.
He's not like, he's better than Morgan and Morgan.
And Morgan.
Yeah. I mean, I hope he at least won the case because he went above and beyond to actually prove his point.
Yes, he did.
A man matching Vallandigham has been seen several times over the years. He's seen sitting in a room with a cigar, again, and He looks through the room's windows down towards the street.
Oh. Probably pondering.
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, why in the world would I do that? Why wouldn't I make sure the gun was not loaded before I demonstrated?
Yes, yes, yes. Always do that, people.
So we talked about Judge Sherman a little bit earlier. He was at one time a Supreme Court justice in Ohio. He suddenly died at the age of 41. So even younger than I thought. He was 41.
Man.
And people describe him as an old, haggardly, bent over man.
Yeah. Man. I don't even know what they think of me. Fruit.
Well, Sherman's death left his wife and his 11 children penniless. One of those sons became Civil War General William T. Sherman. Now, most of the children were put up for adoption. Some say that the guilt of his family struggles has kept him and his spirit at the Golden Lamb.
Wow. I mean, what about his wife?
What about her?
Why didn't she?
She didn't have any money.
Oh, so that's why they had to put him up?
Yeah.
Oh.
We mentioned Sarah Stubbs earlier, that some people think that she's the spirit of the little girl. As stated, she didn't actually die as a little girl, but she did live at the Golden Lamb as a child. Regardless of whether it's her or Eliza Clay, there are possible signs of a child spirit here. The room that she stayed in up on the fourth floor was the same room that people think it could be Eliza haunting, but that's why the name of the room is Sarah's room. That was the room she stayed in while she lived there. One guest took some pictures in the room, and she actually showed her digital camera to one of the employees. There was a girl's dress lying on the bed, physically. There, if you just looked at the bed with your eyes, there was a dress lying on the bed. But when you looked at the pictures taken, it was not in the pictures.
Stop. Oh, my gosh.
So she took a second picture. Same thing. The dress was not in the picture, even though it was laying on the bed. So the guest and the employee saw this. There's also the sound of a child playing and running up and down the hallways. She sometimes even asks other children if she can play with them. One little boy turned to his mother and asked, "Hey, Mom, can I go play with the little girl over there?" Well, his mom said, "What little girl?" He replied, "The one in the white dress over by the stairs." And, of course, Mom didn't see anyone over by the stairs.
Oh, my goodness. That's so amazing. That just always amazes me how little kids can see that.
One employee tells about the time that they were in the Buckeye room working, and she felt somebody behind her breathing down her neck. She quickly turned around to kind of basically tell them to back off, and she was totally surprised that there was no one there at all. Then we got Cherie. Cherie actually worked in the gift shop, and she's got several stories. One of which, she said that she had one of the gift shop employees seem to attract the spirits when she worked there, or the other girl worked there. Several times, a roll of stuffed animals would throw themselves off a shelf at her. She said, "I don't mean one or two animals. I mean the entire shelf. They would actually leap off the shelf as she walked by." Cherie said that she actually saw it once with her own eyes, and she heard about it from other employees the other times. But Cherie had some more stories.
Maybe they just was trying to get her attention so they would play.
The stuffed animals want to play?
No, the ghost was knocking them off, maybe because she was wanting to play.
I don't know.
Cherie said, "Why don't you?"
Because I just don't.
Oh.
One day, she was talking to some customers about the ghost, and Cherie told the customer that, "You know what? I don't really believe in the ghost." Just then, the cash register started up all by itself, and it spat out a crazy receipt that had nothing but X's and O's on it. She showed it to her manager, and manager didn't have a clue what to make of it.
Oh, my goodness.
Like hugs and kisses.
Yeah.
Jerry Wilson, also an employee, she told her story about an encounter with Sarah. She had been cleaning a room up on the fourth floor where she said most of the activity actually happens. There was no one else on the floor but Jerry. She heard a man's voice call, "Sarah." She said it was a deep, authoritative voice. She thinks that it was Sarah's grandfather. She said a few seconds later, she heard Sarah again, but the voice was even deeper and even more agitated.
Oh, well, dang on. I wonder, well, maybe she just disguised her voice.
One housekeeper said that she heard the sound of a tricycle going up and down the hallway, and she heard a little voice say, "Sarah's back."
Oh.
Back again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, that's the story of the Golden Lamb.
That's cool. I definitely like to stop up there next time we're up that way.
Yeah, we'll have to, because like I said, it's like in a different section of town than I was always at. That's why I didn't know anything about it.
Oh, gotcha. So, now, be cool to investigate a little bit.
I think that's also where the Miami Valley Casino is. I think that's in Lebanon.
Oh. So, is that anywhere near Trader Joe's?
Yeah, it's probably 10 minutes up the road.
Oh, okay.
If that, because Trader Joe's, you know what? Trader Joe's actually might be Lebanon. That might be Lebanon, too. So, I think so.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we need to
is.
Do that.
Trader Joe is in Lebanon, so it's in the same city as Trader Joe.
Oh, all right.
Not Trader Joe.
I mean, what I mean, Trader's World.
Yeah.
Trader's World.
I started saying Trader Joe. Trader Joe is just a grocery store.
I know.
But, yep. Yeah, so that's the Big Jesus and all that are all right there. All right, guys. That's that story. Let's take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back with just some updates on stuff, and we'll be back to hear Carrie Hopper.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
All right, Tracy, the only two things we really have to talk about.
And this is weird because there's only two things. Isn't it weird at the end of the year? Like, there's like nothing happening.
We have the 18th and 19th of this month. We will be doing a live show, which we just found out is 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours worth of stories from us. Maybe a little question and answer or something. But that'll be on November 18th, Saturday, November 18th at CryptidCon. Get your tickets at CryptidCon.com. We're free, basically. You get your tickets to come see all the guests and everything at CryptidCon. And there's some great ones there. I'm excited because David Pilates is going to be there.
I know you are.
So he's, of course, of Missing 411 fame. That's all David. And then, of course, Chris Berrickman will be there. And everybody loves his Bigfoot stuff. And
yeah, definitely.
Charlie Raymond from the Kentucky Bigfoot.
We always have a good time there.
I guess the Mountain Monsters will be back again. They always are.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there are going to be all kinds of fun guests there. Your ticket will get you in to see all that. That goes on Saturday and Sunday. And then we're going to close out the show Saturday night. So we'll be 7 to 9, I think is what I was told.
All right.
So people come see that. And then the only other thing we got is the cruise.
Yep.
I talked to Robin Troop a couple of days ago, and he actually, our numbers are up significantly from the last time I talked to him.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited. You've got plenty of time. Go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com. It's us in Brohio. You're going to get a bunch of extra perks on top of the cruise, but I've got pricing and everything right there for the type of rooms, all the contact information for Robin and the people out at Vacation Experts. You can just make payments on it. As long as it's paid for by July, you're good. If something happens between now and then, you can't go, or you just change your mind, you can get your money back as long as you do before July.
Yep.
So you don't use it. It's risk-free at this point.
And that's a wonderful thing because, you know, things come up.
And you get to make your own payment plans.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just want to pay $100 down and then pay the rest of it at tax time, you can do that. You're not obligated to pay a certain amount. You pay it how you want to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's paid for by July.
Yeah, we're definitely excited. and hope we have a big crowd like we did last year, because we had a blast.
Yep, absolute blast. This is a one-day longer cruise,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to Mexico and leaving out of Galveston. So that gives people a chance. Last year, it left out of Miami, so we had people having to fly from Oregon and Washington the way across the country just to get it. Now we're in kind of the middle of the country,
mm-hmm.
and everybody says Galveston's port is like an awesome port to live out of.
Oh, well, good, so good.
I'm excited. All right, Tracy, what do you got?
For iTunes this week, we have Olivia Ogden 221, Mojo Lobster, and Rabbit Food. Thank you guys so much for your reviews. We appreciate those. And if you know, you guys can take time out to do some reviews, it really helps us move up the chart a little bit and helps
helps us be seen.
Yeah, helps people see us quicker. If that makes any sense. So, but we appreciate that you all take out, you know, your time and to do that. We love to read them every week. So thank you for that. And for Patreon, we have Pamela Nicely Rafferty. Thank you, doll, for your support. We appreciate y'all so much.
Absolutely.
You guys keep us going, and, you know, we just can't thank you all for all that you do for us.
All right, let's go ahead and listen to Carrie Hopper. You guys are going to have fun with this one. She's a blast.
All right.
Hey, guys, I'm always excited to bring on new interviewees to the show. We've got a lot of good luck with having repeats, and I love the new podcasters on here, the new paranormal investigators and authors. And that's what we've got today. I've got Carrie Hopper on today. She is a podcaster and a paranormal investigator. Carrie, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This is such an honor. I'm so excited.
Oh, stop.
I literally freaked out when I got the invite. I was running all over telling everybody, screaming, and I'm very excited.
Well, we very much appreciate it. It's going to be a blast. I know I follow you some on social media, so I know you're a very funny person. You got a lot of personality, so I look forward to this being a blast.
Awesome. So thank you.
Let's start off talking about your podcast and tell me a little bit about explain. I always tell people, explain it as if somebody out there listening has never heard it. What are they going to get if they tune into your podcast?
So we are called History of a Haunting, and we are a comedy podcast. It's me and my very dear friend, one of my best friends, Laura Ackerman. And Laura tells the history of haunted locations, and then I tell the resulting hauntings. So we work really hard to research, especially Laura, research the history of the location. And then I will either interview people, call the locations, do, you know, online searches, read articles to find as much out about the hauntings as possible. And what we like to say that we tell you about the most famous, infamous, and almost famous locations and why they became terrifying places to visit. So we do that. We are weekly. And it has kind of evolved into us now actually going and investigating the locations that we've covered. And then we come back and we do bonus episodes of like evidence reveal of the locations and the investigations that we had there. So
give me an idea of how long you guys have been on the air.
We just celebrated 4 years on October 5th.
That's an accomplishment because... You know, most podcasters realize once they get into it, how much harder it is as far as work and effort than they thought it was going to be. It's hard to build an audience. You know, that's the people who are trying to start a podcast that come to me and say, hey, do you have any tips? And I'm like, I can give you all kinds of tips on sound quality, on how to get started and who to use as far as your podcast host. But when it comes to building an audience, it's just hit or miss. It either works out for you or it doesn't work out for you. And sometimes it has nothing to do with how good the show is. I've heard a lot of great shows that still don't have an audience because it's just the hardest thing in the world to do. It's just get that, especially when you're in a niche market like we are, you know, paranormal. Definitely. Not everybody's into it, you know, and I think that's what you guys do well with being a comedy podcast. And you can kind of have people who aren't necessarily interested in the paranormal or the unknown or true crime. And when you throw that comedy part in there, they'll listen just because it's funny. So right. The topic is irrelevant to some people.
Yeah, I would agree 1,000%. And the other thing too is like with the comedy part of it, I am a full believer in the paranormal. I've had a number of experiences. I am all in. Laura is a skeptic. So it's a good balance. And two different perspectives like that is always has been really beneficial to us in being able to grow our audience and our fan base. So yeah.
I love that you guys do the history and the haunting. Because I've always said about our show, even though we're listed as a paranormal show, 75% of the stories are usually history. Mm-hmm. And then 25% are the haunting. But the haunting part is fascinating only if you know the history.
Exactly.
They go together.
Yeah, exactly. And Laura and I really try to not share our research with each other. So that way, when she goes through and she does the history, if it's a place that I have never heard of or don't know a whole lot about, when Laura does her history portion, and then that just sort of validates like the hauntings that I found that she's not aware of. So they really go, you know, part and parcel with each other and just kind of, again, really complement the other. So it's pretty fun. We love it.
So you guys go out and do some investigating now. What's been the most fun place that you've investigated?
1,000% hands down, Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. Yeah, we did that with some friends of ours from Entity Voices Paranormal Evidence. We did the public investigation a couple of years ago, and we loved it so much that I organized a private investigation of us and like 15 of our closest friends. And we all got together and went to Trans-Allegheny. Trans-Allegheny is where I saw my very first full body apparition.
Oh,
it
nice.
Was, yeah, I was outside. It was before they opened it up to us and I was walking around. I'd never been there before. It was the first time. So I'm looking at the architecture and taking video and photos. And there was a young girl in a window in one of the offices on the first floor. And she was looking out the window at me. And she had dark brown shoulder length hair. She was in a gown. And I looked up and she was what we would call an intelligent haunting. Whereas residual hauntings, they don't know you're there. They don't know what's going on. They're not going to interact with you. She looked at me and I looked at her and we both kind of like looked surprised that we were looking at each other. And I just froze in place and thinking, what do I do? What do I do? Camera in my hand. And I'm like, oh my God. And so I looked down to switch it to photo. And the second I looked back up, she was gone. But we looked at each other for a good 5 seconds. It was the most remarkable thing ever.
And you said that was before you actually went in to start the investigation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I'd have just asked for a refund and just went home. Cause I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And that would have been probably for free.
Right. That was the pinnacle. It's a really amazing place. I love the history. It is tragic history, but it is, you know, asylums throughout the world. The history of asylums is not great. We always joke that, you know, these asylums, when Laura starts the history, she's like, you know, they start with the best of intentions. And I'm like, and then it goes rapidly downhill from there. But it's a beautiful building and the owners are working so hard to restore it to what it used to be. And it is, you will not leave. If you're a skeptic, you're going to lean a little bit more towards believing once you leave Trans-Allegheny. It's a huge location. There's, I think, 150 spirits there. And some of the evidence that we captured and the experiences that we had were just phenomenal. And so it's by far the best place I've ever investigated.
You know, it's on my bucket list and it's amazing that we haven't been there because it's literally only like 5 hours from us. So
is it really? Yeah,
yeah.
You should. It's because I'm in Raleigh, so it's not that far of a drive. And my best friend lives in Pittsburgh and I'm in Pittsburgh often and it's only like 2.5 hours from Pittsburgh. So I want to go there all the time. Like every time I drive by, I'm like, I just want to go take a tour. Like it's beautiful. You're going to just love it. You're just going to love it.
Yeah, we're definitely going to make it. It's the same thing with the Ohio State Reformatory. We've driven through there a couple of times. We stopped one time and it was during COVID. We just happened to be coming back from Erie and we stopped there, but it was during COVID and they were doing some renovations at the time. So it was closed. So yeah. I got to stand outside and take some pictures through the fence and that was as far as it got. But yeah, both of those places are about the same distance from us.
Yeah, Ohio State Reformatory is, so Laura and I were vendors at this year's Parapsycon at the Ohio State Reformatory. And we pulled in and we were like, oh my God. Like it was just this, you've seen it's this imposing structure. It's very Gothic. It's very, and then you get inside and the energy is wildly different from even just being in the parking lot. And we had the best time. We're actually organizing another one of those private overnights of the reformatory next August. So we're really excited about that. You know, the private investigations are a lot easier to investigate. And then also if you have a much smaller group than you have in such a large space, it's just easier. And Ohio State Reformatory is another one of those bucket list places that you definitely have to check out. Everybody should.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you said imposing is probably the best word. It's such a beautiful place though. Most of these older places, older prisons and older asylums and stuff are all like that. So yeah. It's amazing. You know, Waverly's right up there too. You know, it's just.
Yes. So, Waverly is definitely up there on my bucket list. I haven't been there yet though.
Yeah. I'm like an hour from Waverly. So I've been more times than I can count. Some legally, some not.
Listen, but, that's the best.
Well, when I was growing up in Louisville, before the Mattingly's bought the place, it was just sitting there and they didn't have any kind of security or anything. So it was where all the teens went to party. And that's where the graffiti came from that's in the place. You know, it's all from back in the early 80s, late 70s. So.
Wow. Okay. All right.
So tell me some of your favorite experiences that you've had other than the full body apparition as far as doing being a paranormal investigator.
I think one of them is we went to the old hospital on College Hill in Williamson, West Virginia, shortly great after place. It is a great place. Yeah. And it was shortly after they were featured on Destination Fear. So they had just opened up and it was Laura's very first paranormal investigation. And so it was me and her and Chris Allgood and Audra Keeler from Entity Voices, just the four of us. We had the whole place to ourselves. And Laura, being a skeptic, was like running around trying to debunk things that were going on. And a lot of them were debunkable. It's a very old building. They had just opened it up to the public, you know. So we were on the second floor. And I think Chris and Audra were down in the basement. So there was no overlap of like noises or anything like that. And I was doing a Facebook Live for the podcast. And Laura and I were going around. And we were showing everybody, you know, this is this and that. And Laura stops me and she goes, "Do you hear that?" So I stopped and I listened. And we could hear an oxygen machine. That shh.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God. And the viewers could hear it through my phone on Facebook Live. And she was like, "Where is that coming from?" And she ran around. She must have spent half an hour trying to find the source of that. And she couldn't. She absolutely could not. And she was just gobsmacked and just kind of dumbfounded that there was nothing that she could do to reproduce that very distinct sound. I think everybody that spent any kind of time in a hospital, either as a patient or visiting, they know that sound. Mm-hmm. And, I sat there and I was talking with the viewers and stuff as she's literally running down the hall and looking at windows and checking this out. And she couldn't. And I just sat there and I was just like smug as hell. Like, I told you, like, I was just so giddy that she had her first paranormal experience. And that was what tipped her into, I've got to do this more. I've got to figure this out. She wants to believe. She's just never been given any true, genuine reason to, but she's getting there with every new investigation. So that was one of them. That was really special. And then I think the very first time I ever did a paranormal investigation was down in Ajo, Arizona at the Phelps Dodge Hospital. it was run by the team of Entity Voices, which is how I got to know them. They were running the public tours. And my cousin and I went down there because my family started in Ajo. My grandfather worked for the mine, and him and my grandmother lived there. And they had their first two children at this hospital. So my cousin and I went down there because we wanted to, one, do the ghost hunt, and two, see this town where our family began. And so the way they did it, like every public investigation, they take you on a tour, they give you the equipment, they send you on your way. So we were up in the nursery, and we were doing some EVP recordings, and we heard a noise. And in the recording, you can hear, my cousin asked me, did you hear that? I said, yes, okay. And so then at the end, you give all your equipment back to, you know, Chris and Tony and them, and they review the evidence, and then they email you what you caught, if anything. What my cousin and I heard was a woman humming in the nursery. And there is a nurse that worked at the hospital named Mary, and she is known to be captured in that area and also in the labor and delivery rooms. And that was the that was my very first time. And first time out, I captured an EVP that we heard. There was nobody else on that end of the floor with us. It wasn't either one of us. We were like, was your nose whistling? Maybe it was one of us. Did your shoe squeak? Like, it wasn't anything like that. But when we heard the recording, you could tell it was a very distinct woman humming. And she sounded like she was in the room with us. So that was another really special one that stands out. And then I think the third one, if I have to pick my top three, I would say it was our private investigation of Trans-Allegheny. Chris had left an EVP recorder down in the lobotomy and recovery area. And the building is, I think it's like 135, 140,000 square feet. And there were 15 of us. So there was plenty of room, and nobody right. happened to be down in that area at the time, but we captured an EVP of what sounds like metal banging on metal, and then a woman screaming. Right, like you hear the bang, like two sharp bangs, and then you hear a woman just blood-curdling scream. It was the most disturbing and yet utterly fascinating EVP I have ever heard. Down in the lobotomy area of one of the most world famous insane asylums was just really, really remarkable. I think those are probably the three events that will forever stand out to me. They may be topped later on in my career, but for now, those are the three.
So we know Laura is a skeptic, and she just recently had her first paranormal experience. What made you a believer and got you on this path of being fascinated with the paranormal?
So my mom was a single mom, and my grandmother helped raise me. And her husband, my mom's father, died when my mom was 15. So he had been, you know, he had been long dead before I was born. I never knew him. But my grandmother, I grew up knowing the story. My grandmother had had a dream where my grandfather visited her in her dream. And he was standing at the foot of their bed, and he was dressed in his work clothes. And my mom, this is about 10 years after he died. And my mom was living in Texas. And he said, Gladys, you need to wake up. Nancy needs you. My mom, you need to wake up. You need to wake up. Nancy needs you. Wake up. And the phone started ringing in her dream. But it was really the phone ringing in real, you know, in real life. And she woke up, and it was my mom calling her from the emergency room of a hospital in Texas. Her appendix had almost burst. And so I grew up knowing that story and just being so, I knew it. They're with us, they're watching over us my whole entire life. And then my grandmother died when I was 30 years old. She's been gone for about 16 years. And I didn't get to say goodbye to her. And 6 months later, after she died, she visited me in a dream. And I got to say all the things that I wanted to say to her. And from that point on, I was like, you know what? I don't know what I have to do. I don't know how I have to do it. I'm not sure what's going on, but I am going to investigate the paranormal. And this is going to be part of my daily life and who I am. And this is the world that I want to live in for the rest of my life. And fortunately, through the podcast, I've been able to do that.
What's been the most, I would say, what's been your biggest surprise about being a podcaster? What has happened that you didn't think would happen, or you're just like, that just completely surprises me. but I'm glad it happened.
I would have to say, without a doubt, when we first started, and it, because we're an independent podcast, right? We don't have, you know, there's no professional producers. We're doing it all on our own. We don't have connections in the industry. And so, like we talked about, it's difficult to build up that base. So about a year in, we started getting messages on our Facebook page and private messages through Messenger of listeners that would thank us for what we're doing, that just by spending a little bit of time with us once a week, it helped them forget how tough their life is and how they're struggling and their depression, that listening to our show made them feel like they were sitting around with friends just talking about their favorite haunted places. And we got a lot of those messages and it just blew us away, because in the beginning we would be like, oh, so-and-so is listening to the podcast. And it was always like friends and family and, you know, people that we knew. But then we started getting messages from like complete strangers. And we were like, oh my God, these are actual, like, genuine, like, fans. We don't know them. We didn't ask them to listen to the show. So we started getting messages like that from them. And that was the one thing we never, ever, ever expected in a million years. And every time we get one of them, it still makes us choke up that we're still able to provide some even small amount of respite from, if you're struggling or and you're having a terrible day or you're really depressed, even that like hour and a half, however long our episode is, that gives them a little bit of reprieve. And, you know, they laugh and they feel like they're hanging out with friends. And that is something that we never saw coming. And we are so grateful for it every single day, every day.
It really is the most rewarding aspect of doing the show. And it gives you a little bit of extra oomph and energy to keep going when times get tough, because times do get tough. And it gets frustrating when you're trying to work a regular job and you're coming home to make time for that. And then you got to make your partner on the show, co-host, she's going through the same things and you're trying to coordinate with each other, and it can really be tough. And, you know, I've said on the show more than a few times, back when I was having to work a day job and was putting in 70 hours a week, 6 days a week, and still trying to do the podcast, there were times where we almost folded up. And those types of emails and comments were what made us feel like we had an obligation to keep going. You know, it was never about the money. We didn't start it to make money, because we sure as hell didn't think we could make any money back in the day.
Right.
And as we did start making money, it was always a, you know, a side hustle, more or less, because we were still working our regular job. So it was never for the money.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that's all it's about. It's about the money. I'm just kidding. But no, it's like I said, it's, you know, we get a couple of those emails every single week, or somebody will write it in a review. And it's just like, it brings you back down to earth. And it's like, you know what, that, you know, just let's refocus. This is why we do this. It's for those people. And we do look at it like that. We do it as the show, as an obligation to people out there. That's why I hate to ever miss an episode. I hate to, because I feel like people depend on them.
Me too.
That might be the episode that gets somebody through that day, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it sounds like you guys, and then also same with Laura and I, you have found that you need those connections with your listeners as much as they need them with us.
Absolutely.
So it's a very reciprocal, I like taking time out of my day. Things have been crazy and you know, but I love to sit down and record, and, you know, I really look forward to that and enjoy it. And I need it as like an outlet to just kind of like with the listeners, step away from the real world for half a second and just sit down and listen to a really cool story. It's remarkable. I love it.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why we've never incorporated somebody to handle our social media or any of that. Now we might have done better on social media had we done that, but the reality of it is we answer every single email or message from, you know, the website or Instagram or whatever. We answer every one of those ourselves, and usually we get to them within, you know, usually an hour or 2 hours from the time they come in. And, you know, because we want that connection. We don't, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody who doesn't do that.
Right.
But, you know, we've got some friends in the podcasting business that I'll, you know, rather than pick up the phone and call them, I'll send them a message on Instagram. Then I'll get back somebody that's one of their handlers and they'll be like, oh, I'll tell them about it. And they'll try, you know, it's like,
yeah,
come on. I just, you know, there are, you know, none of the people I'm talking about are Joe Rogan. Now, I can understand Joe having to do something like that because you'd be overwhelmed, or some of the other big ones.
My Favorite Murder, and yeah.
Yeah, and I definitely understand that, but it's just not everybody needs that, and we're definitely not to the point where we need it, and I kind of hope we never get to the point where we would need it, because that would, I think, financially it would be better for us, but I think overall, I don't think it would be as fun for us.
Right, because you would have to sacrifice something, which is that personal connection with your listeners for the money.
And that's what we like the most.
You know, if you don't have to do that, then yeah, you don't want to. And that's the other thing that people don't understand, it when you are creating a podcast, that you have business decisions that you have to make and weigh against like what you'd really, you know, love to be able to do versus what you need to do versus. And that's definitely one of those decisions. You know, do we stay, you know, true to our listeners and who really enjoy that personal connection with us, knowing that we're going to be the ones that they're talking to, or do we want, you know, a few thousand more dollars? It's for me, and it sounds like for you guys, it's a no-brainer. The listeners all the way.
Yeah, I know some of these podcasts, they get hired on by the bigger companies, or they're a Spotify exclusive or an Amazon exclusive. And
I
know they get signed very lucrative deals. I would have a hard time doing that. Even though it'd be a lot of money, I would have a hard time doing that because I feel like you would alienate a lot of your listener base. I just don't know how many people. I know there's been some that switched over, and I didn't follow when some of these companies went exclusively because, you know, honestly, I don't like Spotify's app when it comes to podcasts, and I don't really care for Amazon's when it comes to podcasts, but.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They're everybody's got their favorites, you know, like this is, you know, I'm an Apple girl, so I don't listen to podcasts on anything else but Apple. And there's millions of people just like me, you know, so that, yeah, what you say makes complete and total sense. There have been, you know, I haven't had too many podcasts that have like gone over to a different area and like they're only on like Spotify or Amazon. So, but I wouldn't, I don't know if I'd follow them there, even though I love them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. We all have our, you know, things that we prefer, and there's nothing wrong with that in the world. So, yeah.
Right. Well, Carrie, it has been an absolute blast having you on today. Tell everybody how they can keep up with you on social media, keep up with the podcast, keep up with anything that you're doing as far as you and Laura taking some of your trips.
Yeah, absolutely. I have had so much fun. Thank you. Again, I'm so geeked out about this. I'm really trying to keep it together, this interview. So you can find us everywhere you get podcasts. We're literally all over the place. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio, all of where you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube. You can find us, The History of a Haunting Podcast. We're on YouTube as well. And on social media, we are on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, and Threads. We don't do a lot with Threads. We just joined Threads. So we're on those. And then you can check out, we've got merch that you can buy, and you can check out our website at hoahpodcast.com. And then what are we doing? 2024 is shaping up to be kind of a big year. We're doing some paranormal investigations. We do like to try and do friends and fan events, and we're doing planning one for October in Hollywood, California. Be a weekend long event, so we're working on that. And then of course we've got our investigations of Ohio State Reformatory, Sweet Springs Sanitarium, St. Albans Sanitarium, and then we're going back to Old Hospital on College Hill too. So yeah, we're excited. Lots and lots and lots going on.
Awesome. Sounds like you ladies have everything going in the right direction. I couldn't be happier for you.
Thank you.
Everybody go listen to A History of a Haunting, and make sure you give them a nice 5-star review after you've listened, and put in the review that you heard them on I was going to say History Goes Bump, and we can probably get you on there too. But you heard them on Hillbilly Horror Stories, and I think they'll be glad to see it, and you can help them move up the rankings a little bit.
Yeah, guys, come check us out. We appreciate everybody giving us a chance. We're not everybody's cup of tea, and that's totally fine, but we're always grateful for just being given a chance, you know? So, yeah, come on out. Check us out.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on, Carrie. It's been fun.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, guys, that wraps it up for us this week.
Yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed tonight's show, and we want you to have a blessed week.
Hey, guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.